Welcome, beautiful one, to the Remarkable Souls podcast. I'm your host, Ann Ribley, here to share with you insights, inspiration, and interviews on what it means to become a remarkable soul. Welcome, beautiful ones, to another remarkable episode here with Dawn Marie Jordan. Today, we are going to talk about restoring rhythm. I have so much to say about this, and I'm actually excited to hear Dawn's body wisdom on it, her expert opinion. I really value and cherish what she has to say, because this is a lot of what I teach with doing the moon rituals. It's about a way to synchronize in the natural rhythm keeper. And there's so many ways that we have rhythm keepers in our lives, from how we breathe to how our heart beats. So welcome, Dawn.
Hey, it's good to be with you, Anne, and all your audience. Hi, everyone.
So restoring your rhythm, I feel like this is such a essential part of our well-being. I think this is what we're all looking for in our lives, and we may not even be able to put our fingers on it when we're dealing with feelings of overwhelm and anxiety and restlessness or lack of a ability to be at a calm, settled point, or busy, busy, busy. What other ways can you think about that when we're out of sync with our own rhythm, how it shows up in our lives?
I see it in my office every day. Stress, emotions bottled up, because there hasn't been enough time to talk through something.
Ooh, that's a good point.
That's really important. I see mothers rushing children in the supermarket, picking them up from school, dropping them off. I see parents at home arguing with the kids about what to get dressed to get out and what the timing of that is. You know, if you have a sleepyhead who likes to sleep in the morning, it can be a hassle every single morning, and this is stressful for everybody.
I feel like this is imperative right now, that we understand our relationship to restoring rhythm, because we're not out in nature the same way. We're not getting grounded in nature and on the earth and working in a relationship as closely. And you can see those that do. There is a sense of natural rhythm, those that are out in nature working with it.
Yes, yes. It is our most restorative external force. Sleep is our most restorative internal force. So everybody, we need to remember we are first and foremost biological beings, and we are absolutely integrated into the natural environment around us. But our minds have gone hog wild and separated us from that. So everyone's first restoration is, first of all, restoring the connection between your body and your mind so that your body can speak to you as loudly as your mind speaks.
Those that have not caught the previous episode on body wisdom, Dawn is an expert resource of wisdom with lots of experience on the idea of body wisdom and how important it is with integrating our relationship with body wisdom.
Right. So, you know, people think of me as a somatic educator. What is soma? Soma is our bodies. Our bodies have an intelligence that holds all the rest. You can't make a move. You can't have a thought without your body. And yet in the West, we still live with this false idea that came to us from an 18th century philosopher that the mind is more important than the body. But the truth is the mind has no existence without the body. So to just sit down and relax and understand that is the first step.
Well, this has been a very illuminating path for me, is understanding how much our subconscious sits in our biology, in the neural pathways that are like a silent network.
Yes.
Within our body.
Yes.
So a lot of times there's so much emphasis that's placed upon like the thoughts that we think, and that's how you change your reality and change your life. And I absolutely know that that is an essential part to a healthy psychological, mental state of well-being. I also know that not just our conscious mental and emotional state that is creating our life, there is actually wiring within our biological sense that we might not even be aware of that's causing us to behave, act, and feel in a certain way.
Yes. And so what I want to add to that is all of that wiring gets its information from your skin. Your skin is your brain turned inside out.
Wow. I've never heard of that before, Dawn.
I'm going to say this one more time because this is going to like blow your mind and then give you a better integration of your mind and body. Your skin is your brain turned inside out.
Okay. Well, you want to know why that is? I find that very fascinating, and maybe you can talk to this. I have said for years, this has been like, this was not something that I read. This was something that I always felt. I could not sleep very well unless I had covers that had weight on me. Mm-hmm. And I would say this all the time. I would even say this with Jack because he doesn't like so much covers. I'm like, I've got to have weight.
Yes, yes.
And so now there's like gravity weighted blankets,
yes,
which he bought me for Christmas. That is a way to like give pressure to the skin to make the skin feel, actually, and it tells the brain you are safe.
Yes.
You're being held.
Exactly. Perfect. You are being held. Yes.
Yeah, so that's why I find that fascinating that I didn't tie that in, but I've said this for years, and it makes sense to me now because I had a trauma very early on in life, and I know that even a lot of listeners that are listening right now, we've all had, I always say that we've all had our own version of the lawnmower, you know, so I don't see my experience by being run over by a lawnmower at the age of two as anything special or doesn't make me more unique. I know everybody has their lawnmower story, but I do know that growing up, like when I would go to sleep, someone would walk in my room, I would just pop out of bed like I was on edge, like I was on high alert. Mm-hmm. And so this is what I've come to learn is how our biology can get revved up. And unless we give it the proper holding space,
yes, exactly,
to reset,
yes,
to calm down, mm-hmm, many of us can be operating on a highly revved up internal biological state and not even know it. Even if our psychology, our mental state is in a calm state.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly, that is exactly the intelligence of our body, a perfect example of the intelligence of our body and how it operates sometimes independent of our conscious mind. And that's where our body wisdom disappears. We can't feel it, we can't name it, and we can't claim it until we consciously put our attention on it. And that is one of the great fundamental lessons of body wisdom as a somatic education system. And for everyone who wants to live a fuller life, you have to learn how to talk to your body so your body talks back to you.
Okay, so I love this idea that you said your skin is one of the first entries in,
yes,
to the body wisdom because your skin is like your brain, mm-hmm, turned inside out.
Yes, yes.
So I find that fascinating. Well, and I see that now how just sleeping with a gravity blanket, mm-hmm, like a weighted blanket, mm-hmm, definitely helps me sleep deeper and easier. So what's another way that we are tapping into like the wisdom of our biology to reestablish our rhythm?
So
that helps me get a good night's sleep. So I get that.
Yeah, so that helps you get a good night's sleep. And for a lot of people, actually, the temperature issue is also critical. So it's your skin that takes your temperature from the outside that tells you how much pajamas do you need on, how many layers of blankets and things like that. So it's about pressure and it's about temperature.
Okay.
It's about the quality of the air in your room. You know, I'm a person who likes to sleep with the window open.
Okay.
And there are people who hate that.
Yeah.
And people who like to sleep in like what I call a hothouse. I am suffocated in a hothouse.
Well, you know, I know a lot of married couples run into issues on this.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why also, sleep number beds have been invented and you know, a king-size bed or a queen-size bed with two sides that have different pressure and support in the mattress. So we can see there's a whole industry that's grown up around tending to how our body feels when we go to sleep so that we really can drift off and relax.
So, I mean, I guess it starts with just knowing what you need.
Exactly, exactly. And part of the problem in American culture is we have a serious touch deficit. You know, for a lot of different reasons, we Americans don't touch each other enough. And we don't move in complex ways anymore. And the machines that we're all living with these days are exacerbating all of this. They're making it worse.
You know, what's interesting that you say about touch is from the day that Jack and I have pretty much been together, we have been hand holders. So we hold hands a lot.
Yeah. That's
every time
a good
we get
thing.
Out of the car, every time we walk into a store, every time we walk out of the store, we are holding hands all the time. And it's funny because it just sort of like naturally occurred. Mm-hmm. And then I read something somewhere about a couple who was giving advice on the longevity of a relationship. And they said, "What's your advice?" And they said, "Just keep holding hands."
Yes.
And it sounds kind of cute and it's fun. But it really struck me when I read that or heard that, because I thought, this is what we've been doing. No matter what our differences are, even if we're in different times or places, there's always a place that we're coming together side by side.
Yes.
Entering into this and that with our lives, a store, the house, whatever it is.
The car.
Yeah. We hold hands.
Yes, yes, because this entrains your hearts and it entrains your minds.
Okay,
And it entrains your breath, therefore.
And as my kids have gotten older and they're teenagers, you don't touch your kids the same way. You know, they're not held the same way, getting that same sense of affection. And I've made an effort because when they're little, they're more apt to reach out and be affectionate and physical.
Yes. So notice that in America, what happens is there's a point where the parents stop touching the kids.
I'm
asking everybody to reexamine this.
So you know what I do? Because I have boys.
Yeah.
So,
and it's worse with boys than with girls, yeah.
So what I do is I just rub their backs. I'll rub and scratch their back. I'll walk up and I'll start rubbing their backs. It's funny because my 16-year-old will say, "Mom, we rub my back.
Yeah.
So
it's
a great way that there still is that physical connection.
Right.
To feeling that touch between us and bonding.
Right, right. And what we know is this is really important for all people all the time. There's actually data on this, that we need four kinds of, let's just call them hugs, physical interventions, loving, safe physical interventions, connections a day. We need four just to keep going.
Okay, so
we need eight to grow and 11 to thrive.
Wow. Okay.
So you got numbers to work with now. I lived in Brazil for a long time and I was married to a Brazilian guy and our daughter is bicultural.
Okay.
So I had to learn two systems of family affection. I'd like to open a conversation about this. Let's discuss this. Let's talk about why we're afraid to touch each other, because this is also what contributes to sexual harassment in the workplace. It's what has contributed to the Me Too movement and the estrangement now of people from each other affectionately and from their own bodies.
I did notice this when Jack and I were first together. We did a trip to the Dominican Republic, and we were sitting next to another couple who had been married for quite a long time, and you could see that there was already the comfortableness of non-touch between them. Mm-hmm. And so since it was in the beginning of our relationship, that's when affections like bubbling out of you in a new relationship. Mm-hmm. And people would jokingly say, because we were at this all-inclusive resort, people would lovingly say to us, oh, well, that's because you're on your honeymoon phase. And Jack would say, we're going to stay on a honeymoon.
Amen. Amen. Yeah. Yes.
So we've had to, and this doesn't mean that we haven't had points where we've been at different odds on things. Mm-hmm. However, there still is enough, I would call it ritual, connection, affection, that is part of our ritual with each other, from holding hands to kissing each other when we see each other, that it keeps that strong and alive between us.
Yes, and this is what I want to point out to couples. This is really important, fundamental practice for couples. So what I would add on to that, and this comes from my Brazilian experience, never go to bed mad with each other. Use pillow talk at night to wrap up your day and remind each other why you're sleeping next to each other. And when you wake up in the morning, same thing, hugs, kisses, snugs. Some people like to really play in the morning.
Well, sometimes it's sometimes all of this can feel like it's almost overwhelming if your habits are not even close to that anymore. So where would you begin in a small way?
So in a small way, just begin with pillow talk at night. You know, hugs, snugs, looking into each other's eyes, touching each other, kissing. Nothing sweeter than falling asleep in your beloved's arms.
What about somebody who's not with someone? How would you invite this more, our touch in mm-hmm. more into our lives?
So there's lots of ways. First of all, is your bed your queen's chambers or your king's chambers? Do you love the feel of your sheets? Is your pillow the perfect size for you? If you're a back sleeper, a belly sleeper, a side sleeper, you need different things. Is your room decluttered? Is your room a tranquil space? Do you turn off the electronics, or better yet, leave them outside your bedroom? No TVs in the bedroom.
It's interesting that you say, is your room a decluttered space? So I wasn't raised necessarily by parents that were organized, decluttered, styled people. And I've desired more of that in my life. So I didn't grow up learning those skills. I've had to work at them later in my life. So, and it felt like it became more overwhelming to me when I had kids,
yeah.
Like really trying to organize all that. It was easier when it was just me and my husband at the time, to maintain a beautiful space mm-hmm. and keep mm-hmm. it decluttered and organized. And then once we started having kids, and then having businesses and stuff, it just felt a little overwhelming to me.
Yeah.
So I had hired a professional organizer who I call my Maya Angelou, because she
yes.
was so, she was wise and she understood feng shui, and she really taught me a lot about the flow and the energy and how to maintain kind of like this. Is it Marie Kondo who, Spark Joy? Kind of she was like that version of that for me.
Right. Tidying up is spiritual practice, and it is hygiene, which is the first step in good health.
Well, here's what's interesting is my very initial consult when she came through my house, she said, and your room is the neatest, cleanest room in the house, my bedroom. So she said, that tells me you can do it. And it tells me, she said, that represents really your deeply private space.
Yes.
How important it is to you.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just get the rest of the place feeling that same way, is what she said to me.
Lucky you.
I know. But
I wish all of you to find somebody like that.
Yeah. But my point is that those were my instincts. Maybe I didn't have everything else exactly organized and decluttered the way I wanted to, but I was naturally drawing to make it my place of rest. That was one room that I never wanted a TV brought in the bedroom, because I felt like that, again, it would take away from it being a place of rejuvenation.
So I just want to add also, the other thing that single people can do is have a bedtime ritual. You know, for most women, what is the ritual where you remove the makeup, where you take the product out of your hair? You know, brush your hair every night, brush your hair every morning also. That also helps awaken the sensory array that's at our skin, that conveys at sleep time and when you wake up. Ah, this is a nice nourishing move. This makes me feel good. This helps me come out of sleepiness, or this helps me take off the day.
I love this idea of finding your bedtime routine or ritual, because I always say that, you know, rituals are a part of our rhythm, and that's the mm-hmm. best way to make a change
yes.
is because I even say that they're like spiritual glue. You know,
yes.
when you do that,
yes.
when you
yes.
have those rituals, mm-hmm. that's our easiest way to maintain, because I feel like habits follow our rituals.
Yes, and the purpose of ritual is to calm the nervous system.
Oh, I've never heard that, Dawn. I love that.
Yeah. So when we have these bedtime rituals, like there's an order that people like to do things in. Like some people like to brush their teeth first. Some people like to wash their face first. Some people like to brush their hair first. Some people like to put their PJs on first. Whatever that is for you, this is your body telling you, if you do these things in this order, it's very easy for me to fall asleep. So just do it. Don't question it.
I love that. I've never heard it quite said that way, that rituals actually calm our nervous system. And I had heard previously, too, about the importance of at big, significant life changes, mm-hmm. how rituals actually carry us
yes.
from one transition to another.
Yes.
But when you think about it, what you just said is that the ritual actually calms our nervous system.
Yes.
It makes us not think, it doesn't put us on a high alert as if something's wrong or going to be, there's all this fear to grip
right.
when we are going into a new change in our life. And the more we can give ourselves ritual
yes.
to calm our nervous system, and there's many ways we need rituals. There's things that are nourishing. There's things that are welcoming. There's things we want to invite in our life. And there's also things that we have to acknowledge if we need to let something go.
Yes, exactly.
So when people have went through a divorce, if there hasn't been some sort of ritual to help carry that transition into a whole new phase of their life,
right.
that can be very traumatizing to the nervous system. It can be very
yes.
traumatizing
yes.
to our sense of not knowing how to calibrate ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not a mental game. This is about really the unconscious that's living in our nervous system of not knowing everything we can transition to this next phase.
Yes. And it helps break the attachments from the previous relationships so that you can process it. I have a friend at the moment who's going through this, and I'm kind of his sidekick to help him keep moving forward. He has two storage units. He moved everything out of his house because he split up with his wife. And now he can't go back to the storage units comfortably and just keep getting rid of stuff because the attachments are so huge.
So what are you advising him?
A little bit at a time. And if, you know, in these moments, if you need to sit and cry, you just stop. And you cry, or you take a journal with you, or you record what's going on inside you. So it literally comes out of your body.
Yeah. I mean, I'm such an advocate about this because that's what I teach with the full moons. It's mm-hmm. like giving yourselves these windows of ritual to allow yourself to process
right.
because it's really important what you're saying, because if we don't and we deny and that causes us to avoid
right.
going in and accepting what has happened or where it is right now, because we haven't given ourselves a safe space
right.
to
right.
hold it
right.
to truly what we're feeling.
Right. And we haven't given ourselves enough emotional space to be really angry, to feel utterly betrayed, to feel pissed off, to feel like, damn, what just happened to us?
I know. It can be really intimidating for people
yes.
to hear about allowing themselves to feel angry or to feel upset. I mean, this is in my soul stamina plan. One of the exercises that I have people go through with releasing what I call karmic debts, because if we don't take these feelings that haven't been able to get reconciled emotionally, mentally, life experiences, resentments, what happens is they carry around as a debt inside of us
right.
to like still act out in mm-hmm. some mm-hmm. other way. And I tell people, and anybody who's listening right now, this is something that could be done at any time.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, write a letter,
mm-hmm.
not for that person, but to that person. This is if you had something that you wanted to release in
right.
regards to a situation or a person. And then the key that I say is don't allow yourself to be spiritually correct. Let it all go.
Yes, yes. Tell the truth.
Yes.
The truth sets you free.
Yes. So you can be angry. You can swear. You can mm-hmm. do all of these things so that you – and there's so many beautiful things you can do. You can use that and burn it at the time of a full moon. You can actually take in – plant it in the ground and plant flowers and, you know, and let it become something new.
Right.
It's the point of letting it get out, letting it be heard, giving it some air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Composting for your emotional trauma is a great way to go.
Yeah.
Gaia will take that care of it for you. You just have to give it to her.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to just really give this idea of there's so many ways we could talk about what it means to restore the rhythm, because ultimately the magic of life that we feel in our dreams and what we want to bring about, it's the synchronicity and getting in sync with ourself that really alivens us with mm-hmm. with inspiration and hope and
yeah.
and being looking forward to our life. Is once we start to get in sync with our own life, what we're feeling, our own bodies, our minds, our hearts. So what are some, would you say, from your body wisdom experience, ways to reestablish the rhythm, to restore the rhythm?
Okay, well, let's go back to our biology. What does a human body need to be well? We already talked about a good night's sleep. So then you wake up in the morning. You need to have enough time to transition from a sleep state into waking. Part of that is going to include getting up, making your bed. One of the most powerful moves that you can make in your day is to make your bed.
I am like utterly shocked at how many people don't make their beds.
Yes.
It surprises me.
Yes.
I can't get into a bed that hasn't been made.
Exactly. Why?
So then if you're going to make it, I say make it first thing. That's how I feel.
Yes.
I've always been a bed maker because, again, that comes back to my room
mm-hmm.
feeling like that's representative of my most sacred
yes.
part of myself and feeling like a source of rest and renewal.
So, yes. So even to take that one step further, think about it. When you smooth out your sheets, when you add air to mm-hmm. those gravity blankets and covers, when you open the window to open the blinds to let light in, or open the window to let more air in general, you are telling the natural world, bring it on, cover me with your air and your light and your goodness. And think about it. From the body's perspective, when I take my hands and I smooth my sheets, that's another moment of feeling how lush it is, how my room is safe and lush, and how it nourishes me. Because my hands, as they smooth out the sheets, are also smoothing out the kinks in my brain. They're smoothing out the kinks in my emotions. Because that feeling of smooth where my body contacts the sheets or the blankets, my brain registers that, but my whole body then feels it because my brain registers and then it says, ah, smooth.
I love this, Dawn. I love this. I'm not kidding. I love this because I feel intrinsically I know some of this on an intrinsic level. Mm-hmm. But now that I feel like you've helped me make a connection, it just turns it up to a whole nother level of what it would feel like, the power of making my bed. It's not a chore now. It's actually a zenful way
yes.
to clear the mind and to prepare the day, even though I definitely have always kind of felt a version of that.
Mm-hmm.
But now you've made a much deeper conscious connection in me. So I look forward to seeing how that feels, especially when you talk about how your skin really is a part of your brain turned inside out.
Yeah.
That is.
Yeah. I mean, you can call it, for all of you who feel like you don't have time to meditate in the morning, how you make your bed can be your moving meditation.
Oh, I love that. I love that. So any of you that are listening right now, if you have struggled to make your bed, here's your invitation. If you've struggled to have time to meditate.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially, you know, I discovered that one when I was a busy mom, didn't have time to do both. How could I do all of it in one move?
Yeah.
And making the bed became that. Washing the dishes for a lot of people is that.
It's not for me.
Just saying.
No, but I know that. Yeah. People say that. And so that's why you got to find your thing.
Yes, I mean, have to find your thing.
I mean, I am a wet cleaner because there's another thing that they say that people either are a dry cleaner or a wet cleaner.
Uh-huh.
And wherever you prefer, like a dry cleaner is someone who prefer like sweeping and vacuuming and stuff.
Right.
I am more of a wet cleaner, which is more like dishes and stuff. But it's not a form of meditation for me. I'm just saying.
Got it. Soap and bubbles are your tools, not your.
But I love a bubble bath. I really do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So again, that's another form of taking care of yourself and nourishing yourself. And some people do showers and baths in the morning. Some people do them at night. You know, for people who work night shifts or sort of not a 9-to-5 shift, a lot of people take showers like in the afternoon.
Okay. I want to talk about this, Dawn, because I feel like we have to speak about the elephant in the room. And the elephant in the room is we're talking about all these wonderful things to get into rhythm and restore. Yet so much of the conversation today and so much of what a lot of people are thinking is, well, I just need to know how to make more money. I need to know how to get more stuff done.
Yeah.
Then I'll do all those things.
The truth is, I can tell you, it's actually just the opposite, and I am the living proof of that.
I know.
When you start restoring rhythm to your life, you will have time to make money. You will have time to think about what is the way that I can make money where I work the fewest hours and make the most money.
I mean, I do. I totally. It feels counterintuitive to the way our world has conditioned us to be operating, because if we're not operating that way, then it's like something's wrong.
Right. And so I'm here to say, join the movement. There's nothing wrong with it. It will actually right you.
I do believe that. I do feel that to be true.
Yeah.
And I do think that nature holds all the answers of how we are. It's the wisdom keeper.
Of course it is. Again, let's come back to the biology. We are nature. Our bodies are a part of nature. And what does a body need? We need sun. We need air. We need clean water. We need clean food. We need shelter. We need meaningful work. And we need 11 hugs and kisses a day. And all of those can happen in a rhythm in a day. So like the Brazilians, if I can go back to my Brazilian experience. So Brazilians, you get, before you leave the house, you got half a dozen hugs and kisses. That's
what they did it in Brazil.
Yeah, that's what we do in Brazil. And then when you leave the house, if you run into anybody that you know well, you give them a kiss on either cheek. So before you even get to work, you could add six or eight more to that.
Well, I mean, that's not going to be what would be the easy go-to person for here in the United States. They just wouldn't.
Right. But you could do handshakes. You can acknowledge people in the bus. You know, like sometimes you get in the bus or you get in your car and you're on the same commute as somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see that same person day after day after day after day. But in America, we almost never acknowledge them. So just acknowledging their presence.
Connection.
Yes.
Really is what I feel like you're saying.
Yes. Yes.
Is meaningful connection.
Yeah. Who's in your space?
Making meaningful connection.
Yeah.
And find the way that it's inviting physically.
Yes, exactly.
Because we need each other.
Exactly.
And the more we have a sense of touch and connection, we make our bodies real. We make each other real.
Right.
We acknowledge each other.
Right. And we give each other permission to be authentically ourselves. In these moments, I don't have to hide if I'm sad. I don't have to come to the office and say, oh, I'm good today when my mother-in-law just died yesterday. No, you can just be who you are. And the rest of us can be emotionally, the rest of us will learn how to be emotionally intelligent and hold that space for you even as we proceed into the morning meeting.
You know, it's really being real is what we're all craving right now. And I feel like the transparency is really up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fundamental.
And and being transparent and being real is what it means to be authentic. And authentic is such a buzzword that's getting thrown around a lot today about being authentic. But it's really the highest vibration we could offer ourselves, because there's no confliction, there's no fragmentation when we truly connect into authentically in this moment where we're really at and what we can offer.
Right. And you only know where you authentically are in this moment by reconnecting with your body.
I agree.
Your breath.
I love that you keep saying this, Dawn. And the reason why I love this so much is because for me, as I have been deepening in my own understanding on things, I notice now when there is some form of truth-telling, or when I say truth-telling, I'm really meaning like being real with this is what I'm feeling mm-hmm. and speaking it. Mm-hmm. It comes almost from my body, not my head.
Yeah, yeah.
It literally leaps out of my body.
Yes, yes. Because when we're connected, that's our truth arises from this convergence of our thinking, feel, and feeling. So we get to inspired, authentic action.
Ooh, so, inspired, authentic action. And I love that.
Yeah, and we all know what it's like to be around a person like that. We want to be with them. We want to play whatever they're playing. We want to work with them. And each one of us can be that person every single day. It's really simple. You just be true to who you are. And mostly in America, we have to learn to speak about our emotional issues. We're very illiterate. We are very emotionally illiterate in America compared to other cultures.
This is why I'm excited to do the Hawaii Writers Retreat with you, is because
yes.
is because all of our great work, and all of us have great work inside of us.
Yes.
And it's in our authentic, inspired action and expression.
Yes.
And the more we can drop down into that mm-hmm. and how we're showing up to take care of our body, our relationships, our family, and to do the work that we're here to do, that inspired, authentic action actually brings us more alive and better connected with all of the world, all
yes.
of us here.
Yes, yes.
And
yes.
It removes the isolation.
Yeah, exactly. And all I have to do is manage myself.
And it connects us.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. It's really simple. It's about turning my attention back to what makes me feel good.
So what would you say in your experience through all the work that you have done with clients in accessing their body wisdom, what would you say is the number one disruptor to people not being able to find their rhythm?
The disruptor is you have to stop.
Ooh, okay.
So one of the exercises I give people is when you're going through your day and you're feeling stress or overwhelm, I want you to just stop, literally, physically, just stop. Freeze, like playing freeze tag when you were a kid. Remember how you play freeze tag when you were a kid? You
yeah.
just freeze. And you shift your attention to your breath.
That is really powerful, because I feel like that, again, that's another counterintuitive. Our culture and conditioning actually tells us, more. Put on the gas.
Right.
Faster. Harder.
Right. But your mind is already on the gas, with a pedal on the gas. So what you have to do is stop the body so you can actually, your awareness can actually recognize that your mind is running at 90 miles an hour even when your body's only walking at 10.
Well, that's what you're talking about is exactly when I did that mentor meeting with Paul Orfila, the founder of Kinko's, who is the co-founder of the Impact Hub, which is actually the podcast room that Donna and I are recording this in right now. And when I did that and I talked all about my creative projects and the things I was working on and the way I was growing my business, at the very end, and I was really intimidated, feeling like I was going to hear too much heady business advice, because I thought, you know, he's a big time businessman who's made multi-millions in business. So after he got done with listening to everything I had to say, he's like, I'm going to tell you something, Ann. Here's what you need to know about your business. My mom would say this to me. Stop long enough for your soul to catch up with your body.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what you're saying.
Yes, absolutely. That's what Sunday church was designed to do. But, you know, we don't have though. That's a rhythm in people's lives that we're losing. So you have to find what your rhythm is. And making time to explore the relationship between your soul and your body is fundamental.
Yeah, so for me, it was, but mine was flipped the opposite, and that's what he said. Is mm-hmm. So a lot of times people, their body is like running way up ahead,
yeah.
And there hasn't been enough time to integrate their soul into it.
Right.
And for me, because my body was injured so early on, I had a lot where my safe zone was more in like my soul, my inspiration, my imagination, mm-hmm. my forward visionary self.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you need to slow down and let your body, the physicality actually
yes.
catch up
right.
with that,
right.
that soul, that inspiration. So I can relate so much that what we really need to do is stop, because all of our power begins to allow us to connect to what it means to be present. And this is a lot of what Eckhart Tolle's mm-hmm. message was mm-hmm. about, was
yeah.
about getting present, but it's really about stopping for an integration.
Yeah, exactly. So in the middle of the day, if you're feeling discombobulated, just stop.
I also know that we need more stops so that we can transition into new things, because this is where when we're busy and we're going from one thing to the next and we haven't given ourselves time to transition into those things,
right. Yeah.
This is where we lose a sense of our presence. We, with a loved one, with mm-hmm. with our husband, partner, children.
Yeah, with our coworkers.
Coworkers, yes.
People, you know, the people who we volunteer with.
And see, I know it feels hard when you feel like you can't because you're too busy.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah, but I know. So again, busyness. I'm just going to say it. Business is our national addiction. It's how we avoid dealing with the really painful things that we all know we need to have talks about,
yeah.
like the trauma. And so I'm just going to say it. I'm inviting you to just hold that, however you want to hold that, and then ask yourself, if I really was making the rhythm of my year focused on what nourishes me, how would I reorganize my year? Just try a little reorganization plan and see how that works for you.
Yeah, this is why I have always said, like, I feel like even if you just started with doing the moon rituals, and every time there's a full moon and a new moon, those were your rituals that you're checking into. Okay, what do I need to let go of that's not working
yeah,
for me?
Perfect.
And what do I need to start acknowledging mm-hmm. and making some commitments towards, or calling in
mm-hmm.
or showing up for, or even just acknowledging that this is something I want to create. This is something
right.
I want to manifest and co-create forward for myself. If you just did that
yeah.
twice a month,
mm-hmm.
that in a course of a year, your life will change.
Yes. Yes, it will.
So that's why.
It's that simple.
Yeah. So that's why I've been such an advocate about teaching how to use the spiritual practice of doing a moon ritual, because the moon is our natural timekeeper here
mm-hmm.
on Earth.
Yes, yes.
It keeps the ocean tides from not getting stagnant. And it's really a way to look at what you're talking about. Like, what do I want the next year to look like?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
giving ourselves permission to drop down into that.
Mm-hmm.
And because just as much as painful, hard, heavy experiences can be weighted upon us,
mm-hmm.
same thing with things that we want to create and dream and
right.
express and do. If we don't give it the time of day and it stays locked up in us, it can become just as much of a burden that's
right.
heavy.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. One of the things I gave up when I became a mother was I gave up my life as a writer. Because I couldn't do it all. And I finally admitted that to myself. And now I get to go back and fully blossom in all that. And that's one of the great gifts of doing the writer's retreat with everybody.
Yeah, I'm with you on that too. That I'm transitioning into a new phase. My kids are, I have a 16-year-old and an 18-year-old. Mm-hmm. So there's opening up a new space.
Right.
And I have my movies that I've written, and I have lots of writing projects that have been curating for myself that mm-hmm. I'm looking to do. So I'm actually looking so forward to having writer's retreats be a regular part mm-hmm. of something I do once or twice a year.
Yeah, the rhythm of our work year and our gift to everybody to hold that space.
Yeah.
For whoever is ready to bird their books.
Yeah. Hawaii has always been a healing spot. So that's right now where we're picking, for me, mm-hmm. the islands themselves have something magical to them.
Yeah, it's a deep feminine culture, right? It holds us well.
Yeah.
It cradles us. It nourishes us. It's slowed down.
Yeah, it does. It definitely has a restorative rhythm.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember Deepak said, I remember this, probably read this in one of his books 20 years ago, and he said one of the fastest ways to get centered is what the way he worded it, was to go to the ocean because of the natural rhythm of the ocean restores us back to our center.
Right.
To restore our rhythm, it's happening always within a 24-hour period, lots of opportunity. It's happening within our own bodies, with our heartbeat, with our breath, mm-hmm. with our morning and our night. That's a rhythm.
Yeah.
You know, when we go against that natural rhythm, it's much harder. Those people will even say it's much easier to sleep at night and be awake during the day than it is to flip that rhythm. Mm-hmm. And the more we get inside our rhythm, the natural rhythm mm-hmm. that is meant for, and we all have our own specific signature way
yeah.
that we interact with the world. But there is also some general natural rhythms mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that we can find our way back into our own specific rhythms for ourselves by using the natural general rhythms that's available to all of us.
Right, right. You know, Anne, we as women have so much power to restore rhythm. Because, like it or not, we are still the people who set the rhythm of the home. And especially if your home has young children, when you have a rhythm to your day, the whole family flourishes. So, you know, breakfast is at 8 a.m., we leave for school at 9, lunch at school is at noon, then we pick the kids up at 2 or 3, and then there's snack time at 4, and then there's dinner at 6. So, and I may be describing for you a calibration of eating during the day that has practically disappeared from your life. And the reason I'm describing it is this is something that you can do in your own home to help start restore the rhythm of your day in your home.
Well, women are naturally rhythmic beings. I mean,
yes.
Look at how our biology is built.
Yes.
It has a rhythm with our menstrual cycle. And,
right, right.
And I love that idea that women hold so much power with the rhythm.
Yeah. And when we go to work, we have the power to invite our colleagues into a rhythmic, how shall I say, a plan for our work that respects the rhythm of what days people are together and what time frames are really possible instead of trying to do the impossible.
You know, I would say that intrinsic in all of us is a rhythm. It's how life is built.
Yeah, it's a pulse.
Yeah, life is a pulse. And so everything that we talked about today are just invitations into restoring the rhythm.
Yeah.
But you already have a knowing.
Yes.
That's already existent in you.
Yeah.
That you can begin to find and resonate with mm-hmm. the way to restore your rhythm.
Yeah. So I invite you for the next 7 days to actually find out what your ideal rhythm is. And you need to begin with sleep. So this is the game. For the next 7 days, you go to bed at 9:30 every night. No alarm clocks. And you just note what time you naturally wake up and you chart that. And then you'll know how many hours a night of sleep you need. And once you recognize that, then it's your job to incorporate that new rhythm into the rest of your life. And then watch how that becomes the foundation for restoring all the other things as well.
That's beautiful. I love that. Thank you so much, Dawn. I just love you, appreciate you so much. And I am so thankful that you came in today to share your wisdom about body wisdom, about restoring the rhythm in our lives, such an advocate about how intrinsic it is for our well-being. So I appreciate you so much. Thank you for coming in.
It's my pleasure. Delightful to talk to you.
Okay, namaste, my beautiful ones. Namaste.